Our next case this morning is A19-0797, Mayor versus the Commissioner of Public Safety. I guess our counsel aren't in the room. Oh, there we go. Good morning, counsel. Both of you have 15 minutes for your argument, and counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. Whenever you're ready, you can take the podium, adjust it as you see fit, and when you're ready, just state your name and the party you represent for the record, please.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jay Adkins. I represent the appellant, Alex Jeffrey Mayer, in this matter. Today, I'll be asking the court to rescind my client's license revocation and reverse the district court. This case presents unusual facts, and it raises a question of what happens when an officer assumes the role of a lawyer and gives legal advice. Legal advice that not only instructs the appellant how to act at the critical stage of deciding whether or not to submit to a DMT data master test, but also informs the appellant that any lawyer he will call will provide the very same advice that the officer has already provided. I'll be asking this court to consider two main arguments today. First, and primarily, that this conduct renders my client's right to contact counsel under Freedman unvindicated. Second of all, that this renders the advisory that was provided to my client misleading, illegal, and coercive in violation of his due process rights. Now, under the right to counsel, the Minnesota Supreme Court was very clear in Freedman, announcing that when there is this right to counsel, it's because we have a critical stage. And quote, "a attorney, not a police officer, is the proper source for legal advice," unquote. The Freedman Court went on to explain that an attorney serves as a neutral arbiter that can explain to a client all of their options and can have that client's best interest at heart when providing said information. Now, the facts in this case are not particularly contested, thanks in large part to the video recording that is now equipped with by most police agencies. And I can recite them very briefly. Mr. Mayer was arrested on September 26, 2018 for suspicion of DWI. He was brought to the Olmsted County Adult Detention Center, where he was read the implied consent advisory. The language of the implied consent advisory matches what is provided in the statute, which informs my client he has the right to contact a lawyer, and if he chooses to do so, he'll be provided a phone and phone books. Mr. Mayer elected to invoke this right. At the 55-minute, 40-second mark of that recording, Mr. Mayer begins to discuss with the officer that he notices there is no local counsel in the book that he was provided. And this is when the officer gives his first advice. And he informs Alex Mayer that everyone, from his experience of sitting in on many of these advisories, everyone that contacts a lawyer is told to take the test. This advice is then heard on that recording affecting appellant when he states at the 55-minute, 50-second mark, based on what you're saying, I should just go ahead and take the test. Further, appellant states, I guess I just want to hear an attorney say it. And the officer can also be heard saying on the video, I'm giving you information to help you make a decision. Then again, at the hour and 44-second mark, right before ending his attorney time, after only 11 minutes, appellant states, so basically what you're telling me is that if I call a lawyer, they're going to give me the same advice that you've already given. And the officer responds in the affirmative. Now, albeit just before responding in the affirmative, the officer acknowledged that he is not a lawyer and can't state for certainty, but nonetheless stated that yes, most likely yes, the attorneys will give you the same advice that I, a licensed police officer, have just given you. Right before the test is provided at the 1 hour 4 minute mark.
Could I ask you this, though? But the officer, I mean, there's no dispute that the officer did say at the same time, I'm not an attorney, and this isn't legal advice coming from me. I've got the transcript here. He said, put it this way, from what I've seen, about any attorney in that book is going to give you the same advice.
He certainly did say that.
Okay.
And on the second...
Then he followed that up with, but I'm not giving you advice here.
Correct. And the district court noted that, and I think quite well in the order. I believe it was page 11 of the order where Judge Wallace indicated, simply saying this is not legal advice does not change the substance of what you're providing.
So you're very familiar with the court's order, obviously, citing to it from memory. There were two things in the analysis, if you will, the section of the court's order that were facts but weren't listed specifically as fact-finding. And I'm curious to see, as you say that these facts are undisputed, whether you dispute the statement that Deputy Wagner looked up the number of the defendant's preferred attorney, and secondly, the statement that Deputy Wagner encouraged Mayor to contact an attorney outside of Rochester. So there's two factual statements that the district court makes. Do you dispute those? Because both facts suggest that in addition to giving what you're calling legal advice, he's also encouraging at the same time Mayor and helping him to contact an attorney.
Well, let me answer those in two forms, Your Honor. No, I do not contest that those statements were made. I'd ask this court to consider, though, what the reality of that is. I mean, this officer just informed a driver, a layperson, any lawyer you call is going to get the same advice, but you can call him if you'd like. So simply making it physically possible to still call an officer, or to call a lawyer, I beg your pardon, I think negates the fact that the advice not only directs Mayor how he should act, but tells him when you do, if you are to call a lawyer, you're going to get the same advice that I just gave you.
Right, and so my question is going more to where are these lines and where should they be drawn? Clearly, if an officer were to obstruct a person's attempt to contact or consult with an attorney, that probably would not be vindicating that person's right to counsel. But this isn't someone obstructing or preventing or only giving the suspect, the person suspected of drunk driving, a part of the phone book that has no attorneys in it, or a phone that doesn't work, or constantly interrupting that person. So we don't have an officer who's affirmatively obstructing or getting in the way, and in that way preventing. So what we do have here, though, is something else. And so I'm trying to figure out from you, where do you draw those lines in light of the statements that he makes that are assisting the meaningful contact and consultation with an attorney?
Okay. On a couple of those points, first, I would stress that when you make a statement as done here, simply making the phone available and indicating to the driver you still can call a lawyer does not rectify the content of what was said. I agree with Your Honor that this is not a physical obstruction, but it's based off the content of what this officer said. Now, there is a unpublished case which I cited and provided to opposing counsel, State v. Carter, where this court looked at the potential of an officer being disruptive during the attorney time. And in that case, they indicated, one, the attorney was not, factually was not disruptive, but it indicated in that that there was no appreciable impingement on the ability to communicate. And here, when we have someone who is, in essence, being dissuaded from contacting a lawyer because the officer has assumed that role, I think we have cleared that line. I think the legal advice of you should take the test in and of itself crosses the line. To, on top of that, say that any lawyer that you call will give the exact same advice I just gave further crosses the line.
So in the body of cases that discuss a person voluntarily ending their attorney consultation time, including the cases that say a very short amount of time is still vindication because they made a voluntary choice to conclude that time, looking at those cases, those cases turn on how that decision to end time was made. And I believe it was a short amount of time in this case as well.
11 minutes, Your Honor, correct.
So how do you apply the body of cases regarding voluntary ending of time to this case, where it doesn't appear that the officer did something to render involuntary the decision that Mayer made to conclude his consultation period.
Well, I suppose...
In the way that you might think of involuntariness in the consent context, it looks like.
As argued at the district court, I do think that the decision here was involuntary. And the judge even noted in her order, page 11 and 12, that my client made statements at the time, in real time, that is recorded on the audio, relying on the advice he was given. So while it may not be a forceful ending, it comes down to the content of what's being said and what the driver is being informed. And I will admit further, Your Honor, that there are not a lot of cases that deal with this. And I think that goes to the point that I'm trying to raise here today. This has to violate the right to counsel. I've watched many implied consent videos in my job and in my career, and I've seen officers be asked questions for legal advice, and 99.9% say, I can't give you legal advice. They follow the script that the implied consent statute and advisory provides. You can call a lawyer for that. Here's the phone. Here's the phone book. This is the only example of an officer coming in and saying, you should take the test, plus any other lawyer would tell you the exact same thing, which is not necessarily true.
Well, could I ask you this? Because, I noticed the judge, I thought it was kind of curious and interesting that the judge set up the memorandum in support of the decision by saying first was the breath test coerced, and the judge found no coercion. Then the judge dealt with the issue of whether the deputy gave legal advice, which considered separately, and said, "Well, then it was on the line,
dangerously close to the line." I believe
dangerously
was the quote.
Close to the line, but the judge was very clear before even addressing that issue that there were no threats, that the consent was voluntary, that there was nothing coercive. And I note that the judge quoted the language from the officer where your client said, how much time do I got? Am I on a limit here? What's going on? And the deputy actually responded, as long as you're actively looking to call somebody, I'll give you time to make a couple of phone calls. So the judge, based on that, said it's not coercive, and this whole issue of whether there is legal advice or not is a whole separate consideration.
I have two responses to that because I had some of the same thoughts when I read the order for the first time myself.
Right.
The judge also quoted the language and credits the testimony of my client at the implied consent hearing that he was relying on that advice and corroborates that with the statements caught in real time where he says, based off what you're saying, I should take a test. And at another time, if I were to call a lawyer, you're telling me they're going to give the same advice. And the response is in the affirmative. Where I think there's another interesting question about the order, Your Honor, is the fourth section where the court goes into great detail to illustrate that these statements by the officer are inappropriate, should not have been made, and as we quoted a moment ago, dangerously close to being illegal. The unauthorized practice of law as provided in statute 481.02 sub 1. This officer informed the driver, or the DWI suspect to be more precise, how to act at what the Freedman Court called the critical stage. And in fact, if you listen to the audio, he said, based off me being in a number of these implied consent advisories. So he's also holding himself out as an expert to a certain degree. To illustrate really how close to illegal, if not already across that line, this would be, imagine for a moment that someone called my office and a legal assistant answered and said, well, Mr. Atkins is not available, but here's what he would tell you to do. Or what if a suspended attorney with his license suspended is called and says, you know, right now I'm suspended, I'm not supposed to be acting as a lawyer, but here's what you ought to do. I think it's pretty safe to assume that suspended attorney would be facing some consequences for practicing law without a license. And that's what we have here, and I think that's what the court struggled with, because what struck me was that fourth section goes at great detail to illustrate how egregious, if I may be so blunt, the conduct was here. but then never illustrated how that applies to the conclusions of law. It never applied those determinations and said how that changes the decision.
If the deputy's saying, you should contact an attorney, let me help you call your preferred attorney, if that's not enough to, let's say, use cure as a word, if that's not enough to cure the other statements, what could have been enough?
And I've thought
not
about
not enough
that.
For him to say, I'm not an attorney.
Right.
So what would have been enough? Anything? Or are you saying that once you make that statement, in my experience, all the attorneys tell you the same thing, nothing you could say after that would be sufficient?
So I agree with two of those options. The first one is, and it's a saying that my mother-in-law always makes, is some toothpaste does not go back in the tube. I do think there's a certain degree of you can't unsay that. But I certainly could envision a potential scenario where an officer immediately disavows what he said, apologize, and say, you in no way should rely on what I said. In fact, I insist you talk to a lawyer. That at least would present some plausible scenario. I see my time's up. May I finish my thought?
Please.
I certainly think there could be some plausible scenario where that a statement could be cured. But when you are saying, this is what you should do, and every lawyer in the state of Minnesota is going to tell you the same legal advice, I think it would be very difficult to cure that. And that's why this opinion in this court today is so important, to make it clear that this conduct cannot be undertaken. And for these reasons, we'll be asking that you rescind the license revocation. I would ask to respectfully reserve my 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. William Young, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the Commissioner. This is a very atypical conversation that happened during the advisory, I think. There's really no dispute about that.
Very atypical?
Atypical, mm-hmm. Correct. Although it is not atypical for drivers to ask questions during the advisory and for officers to steer them towards answers. Normally they don't go as far as to say, here's what an attorney is going to tell you. But often they will ask questions like, in this case, how much time do I have? That's a very common question that's answered. Again, there's no set script. The officer basically just tries to convey the information by statute. At the outset, I think it's important to note that before any of this conversation happened about what an attorney may or may not tell Mr. Mayer, Mr. Mayer asked for a specific attorney. The officer looked him up on the internet, called it for him, and handed him the phone. So at the very outset, the officer is already attempting to vindicate their rights, the right to counsel. After they were unable to reach that attorney, Mr. Mayer did not leave the attorney a voicemail, giving the attorney an opportunity to possibly call him back. He just hung up. Then he paged through the phone book for a while, again, pursuant to that right to counsel, where he needs to be offered phone, access to phone books, and a reasonable amount of time. And it wasn't until he started commenting about how there weren't any local attorneys, and I don't know what to do, and I really shouldn't do anything, that the officer, while continuing to encourage him to make calls to an attorney, saying, don't worry about the area code, that's when they started getting into this conversation where the officer said, here's what I always see in my experience. And should the officer have said that? In a perfect world, he probably shouldn't have. But that doesn't necessarily mean the right to counsel wasn't vindicated or that Mr. Mayer's consent was coerced. I think the district court did a really good job of showing, walking through the steps, or the tests laid out by this court and the Supreme Court to show how under the consent analysis from Brooks and DD and Harris, that analysis did not drive the court to lead, or that did not lead the court to determine that the consent was coerced. Instead, she found that Mr. Mayer consented voluntarily to the test under the circumstances based upon who he is, what was said, the circumstances of the encounter. Similarly, she did a very thorough analysis as to this conversation and whether the right to counsel is vindicated. And the Section 4 of the opinion, which came after all that, it still details that conversation. It's quoted extensively throughout her order as to these different comments made by Deputy Wagner. But the court did not find that there was, on page 7, she notes, there's no argument that any of these statements misled appellant. She then notes there were no threats to with any offenses that could not have been charged to appellant. She went through the steps of the test to determine that the right to counsel was vindicated because, again, he was provided a phone, several phone books. Again, they even used the internet to find an attorney that he requested. And repeatedly, the officer kept saying, use your time, call somebody, don't take my word for it. You know, he was being asked questions, he answered them. Should he have probably kept his mouth shut? That probably would have helped, but it doesn't necessarily mean that his rights weren't, that Mr. Mayer's rights weren't vindicated. Looks like you had a question, Judge Wooten.
Well, I guess I'm just trying to figure out, I mean, do we want to adopt a bright line rule that these police officers shouldn't say anything and just hand them three telephone books? I mean, are the defendants really going to be better off if we come up with what's, I think, being proposed, that a bright line rule is that the officer says nothing and they're just on their own? If they can't get an attorney, too bad, so sad. And, they basically are without any kind of direction other than what was given to them in the implied consent advisory. I'm just wondering if that's a result that's going to really be beneficial.
And, Your Honor, watching these videos of these many, many DWI arrests, you see that during the advisory process, it's typically very conversational. And often the person who's being read the advisory does have numerous questions, and officers are generally, oftentimes they will, like in this case, they reread parts of the advisory when there seems to be any confusion. They try to help them, again, vindicate those rights. In this case, the officer said, here's what I always see. In a perfect world, would he say that? Again, probably not, but the officer is responding to the appellant, and I think your question raises that concern. Do we want the officers just to sit there stone-faced and just say, here's the form, here's what you were told, it's up to you, and then after a certain amount of time, we're just going to be done?
I mean, I'm just looking at the deputy saying, you know, as a first-time DWI, so long as you blow twice the legal limits is a misdemeanor, but getting charged with refusal to test is a gross misdemeanor, so take that as you will. I mean, I don't know how that... I mean, first of all, that's the officer who obviously is very familiar with these charges, just saying what his knowledge is of those charges.
But and
I don't know how that hurts this defendant in having that information.
And I would follow up with shortly after that conversation, a minute or two later, at 5850 on the video, Mr. Mayer expressed concerns that he didn't want to have the whiskey plates in his car, the W license plates. And the officer responded correctly, saying, "If you don't, as long as you don't blow double the legal limit, you're not going to have to worry about that as a first-time driver." So again, Mr. Mayer expressed a concern, and the officer responded correctly as to what the status of the law was in that conversational tone. That was something that was brought up for the first time by Mr. Mayer, which further reflects that this is a very conversational interaction in which the officer is trying to be helpful and just conveying those informations to concern, especially when Mr. Mayer hasn't yet been able to get a hold of an attorney, and the officer told him repeatedly, both before and after those two portions of the conversation, now is your time. Call somebody. Don't worry about where they are. Don't worry about the area code. Just pick somebody out of the books and give it a shot.
Well, isn't that what we should be looking at with this transcript, though, as to whether anything he said was basically encourage him not to call an attorney?
I think you're absolutely right, and I think that's what Judge Wallace, in her order, relied upon when she found that the right to counsel was vindicated, is that the officer, while he was telling things, he wasn't misleading Mr. Mayer, and there was repeated encouragement. Even the portion that that opposing counsel just quoted here right at the end of the video at the 1 minute and 45 seconds, sorry, 1 hour, 0 minutes and 45 second mark, when Mr. Mayer concluded his time to contact an attorney, when he voluntarily ended it, he said, "Now they're probably just going to tell me the same thing." And the officer said, "Yeah, I'd say most likely, yeah. But again, I'm not an attorney. Like, I don't know for sure. Give it a shot." And so there wasn't any sort of...
Literally say all those words?
This is my paraphrasing of the transcript,
okay.
So I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
My paraphrasing says, "I would say most likely, yes. But again, I'm not an attorney, so I don't know for sure."
Okay.
That might be totally accurate, but I would say rely on Exhibit 3. Don't rely on me.
Okay.
So do you think that there's anything, and we're talking about voluntariness, you're making the point that nothing he said was misleading. Do you think it makes a difference if it was misleading, or do you think there's anything he could have said beyond what he did that would render involuntary Mayer's decision to terminate his consult time?
Judge Bryan, I would hesitate to say that there could be nothing that could be said that would be misleading. There's nothing that he could say that would.
Well, let's put aside misleading, because there's a misleading statement potentially is a separate hypothetical. But in terms, let's say it's not misleading, but it's still more advice, or it's some other statement that isn't misleading, that is not on its face preventing or obstructing meaningful consultation. Is there anything besides misleading and besides obstructing threats or promises or that kind of thing?
I think
that you would put into this category of statements, advice, if you will, that affect the voluntariness of this decision to end the consult time.
Given your hypothetical, I think that if at the very conclusion of the advisory, Deputy Wagner reads the four paragraphs and then asks, do you understand what I read to you? The answer is yes. And then he says, would you like to contact an attorney? At that point, he says, but the attorney is going to tell you, take the test. There's no point to even bother calling them. I think that would be a different case. But here, when he wanted to contact an attorney, they looked it up on the internet. They called him. They let him. He could have left a message, but he chose not to. They gave him other phone books. It wasn't until the conversation continued where he kept saying, I can't find anybody local. I don't want to call anybody local, where the deputy was kind of chiming in at that point in time saying, try somebody. Here's what they usually say, but go ahead and give it a shot.
So for you, the bright line might be advising someone, it's not worth it. Don't bother. Don't
exactly.
Do it.
Like, you have this right, but don't even waste your time on it. I think that's different than, we're going to help you try to vindicate it, but here's what I always see happening, but by all means, keep trying to exercise that right. I think that's a different case. I think under that hypothetical where they say,
don't even
waste your time.
There's some statement that's discouraging contact.
Exactly. And even here with these statements as to what Deputy Wagner is always seeing in his experience, he still wasn't discouraging. He was still encouraging him to, don't take my word for it, call somebody. Now is your time. Give it a shot. So I think that's the factual difference between your hypothetical and what happened here. And I think Judge Wallace really kind of honed in on that in her order. So yes, these are concerning statements. These are borderline illegal, possible unlicensed practice of law, but they didn't rise to the level of not vindicating Mr. Mayer's right to counsel, and they didn't coerce his consent to the breath test. Your Honors, if you have no other questions,
Let me ask another question, too. I'm curious about your response on the case law is pretty clear now. For breath tests, there is a separate, apart from consent, there's search incident to arrest, exception to the warrant requirement, but neither party's argued that. And I guess I'd like to give you an opportunity to explain why you think that case law is irrelevant for our purposes today.
Your Honor, under the search incident to arrest under the Birchfield Supreme Court case, again, it wasn't really argued or briefed below, and so I would argue that, I'd say at the outset, it's not really before the court. But having said that, the implied consent statute, or the breath test statute after the change in the case, still offers the drivers the right to refuse the test. So in this case, because Mr. Mayer consented to the test, the exception to the requirement, to the Fourth Amendment warrant requirement, would be consent. Whereas if there was a refusal, then the reason that the refusal wouldn't violate the due process rights is because it could have been a lawful test under the search incident to arrest.
Well, I understand what you're saying when it comes to the implications of the constitutionality, I guess I'd say, of the right to the constitutionality of criminalizing refusal. But let's, in another context, if someone's arrested and they consent to searching the backpack that they're wearing, but there's something wrong with the consent, there still is a separate potential search incident to arrest of that backpack that if that's done, could potentially allow for that evidence to be admitted. So wouldn't the same potentially be applicable here?
It could be. I think just, again, relying upon the implied consent statute, if the driver were to refuse the breath test, then under the statute, no tests shall be administered. And so in that case, the driver in that case would have the argument that you didn't comply with the statute. Now, the statute may provide more protection than the Constitution, because it's not authorizing a test that is authorized under the Constitution, but that would be why the search incident to a test wouldn't necessarily apply here as much as consent is the proper avenue to be an exception to the Fourth Amendment warrant requirement.
Because of the statutory requirement.
Correct. Because the statute is saying, that so under the Birchfield case, it says a breath test after a DWI arrest is a lawful Fourth Amendment search without a warrant as a search incident to arrest. But the Minnesota statute says, but if they refuse that test, being read the advisory, then no test shall be given. And so then you wouldn't have compliance with the statute, in which case you may be able to go forward.
No test shall be given, and there's a crime.
Right. So. Correct. But in that case, there could still be a criminal. If they still administered a breath test after the driver refused, there could not be an implied consent revocation. Now, what happens on the criminal side of things is a whole other ballgame. But there would not be a proper implied consent revocation because the driver refused the test at the end of that process.
So is it a valid... So a petitioner... Did the petitioner here... I should know this from looking at the petition. Argue a lack of consent to take the test?
Consent was one of the issues that was raised. The argument was that the consent was coerced by the Deputy Wagner statements.
Okay.
And the district court went through the test under Brooks, D.D. Harris, about who the person is, the nature of the encounter, what was said and how it was said, all those factors, and found that, made factual findings as to each of those factors to show that the petitioner consented, voluntarily consented to the breath test.
Okay.
And that is section, I believe, 3 of the district court's order? Maybe 2. 2 or 3. One is the vindication, one is the consent issue. So, are there any other questions, Your Honors? If not, I would ask that the this court sustain the revocation and affirm. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. I would use my rebuttal to address a few points that were raised by Your Honors. It was asked, should the officer just say nothing under this scenario? And that's not exactly what's being advocated. But what's being advocated here is what the officer cannot do is cross that line into legal advice. And that's what Friedman talks about when it says this is a critical stage decision. And the source of the advice matters. And the source must be an attorney, not a police officer. So I would caution this court from considering, well, was it maybe correct legal advice? The question is the source, and the Friedman Court makes that very clear. I would also ask this court to consider, and as I mentioned very briefly, is what will if this opinion upholds the officer's conduct, what does that opinion mean? What does that green light? At 1 hour, 23 minutes of Exhibit 3, the video, and this is admittedly after the test was given, this officer admitted that friends and family call him when they are in this situation and he gives them advice. It's right there. And that's what Friedman announces. The source matters. It cannot be the cop. It has to be a lawyer. So when we're asking whether or not the person would be better off just by having an officer kind of stonewall them, I think the better response is, are they getting the information from where the Minnesota Supreme Court said it must come from? And that's why when I laid out the issues, I said primarily this really should fall down to Friedman, because the Friedman reasoning is what is contradicted by the actions of this case. When they pointed out where the information must come from, it is that is violated by an officer not only claiming to know what other attorneys will say, but instructing the appellant on how to act at that, quote, critical stage.
Do you agree that what we should be looking at, though, is not the fact that the police officer was talking to him necessarily, but as to whether what he was telling him obstructed or encouraged him not to get an attorney?
I think to a certain degree, I think that's relevant. I mean, it's not just that he advised him, the appellant, to take the test. It's that every other lawyer in the state of Minnesota is going to give you the same advice. I view those two in conjunction with each other.
Well, and I just want to break this down a little more because I'm very literal. But if you know, when I look at the judge's order and I look at the transcript, that's, you know, the first part of that transcript that's cited seems to be dealing with the issue of should I get an attorney or should I not, and what is the attorney going to say, and that seems to be more pertinent. But when I look at the second transcript where the officer's just saying what's a misdemeanor and what's a gross misdemeanor, is that? I mean, would that be inappropriate? I mean, does that support you one way or another? I mean, because I don't think you disagree with what was said, right?
Well, no, I don't disagree with what was said. And
I mean, wouldn't that be helpful to a defendant to know that it's a gross misdemeanor if you refuse to take the test? I mean, isn't that something you want to make sure the defendant does know?
The legislator made it clear what information a driver is to receive from the police officer and that all other information must come from a lawyer. That's where the Freedman and all the cases interpreting Freedman come in. But I would agree with Your Honor that merely advising what's a misdemeanor, what's a gross misdemeanor, when mandatory bail gets triggered, I think that presents a completely different set of facts. The key here, from my perspective, is that it informed Mayor how to act at the critical stage, and that's the words that the Minnesota Supreme Court used. It's that here's how you need to act at that time, and every other lawyer you call will give the same advice. But I certainly agree that it's a different scenario. If all we had were information about what is a misdemeanor and what's a gross misdemeanor. But still on that point, Your Honor, I would also ask this court to think, do we really want to be deciding when an officer can give legal advice and when they can't based on whether or not it's correct? Because that's not what the unauthorized practice of law statute says. It doesn't matter if it's correct. It matters is who it comes from.
But I think the language that's concerning to the court is that first transcript language.
And that's what I'm trying to highlight, yes. It's
because it's talking about, it's not just the general statement of the law, which any police officer would know. It's the fact that it's centered on this defendant's right to call an attorney and what that attorney may or may not say, right?
Correct. It certainly informed the appellant how to act at the critical stage and dissuades him from calling a lawyer because the officer made it clear on two separate instances that any advice that he gets from a lawyer will merely duplicate the advice he has already provided. I see my time has run up. I respectfully ask that Your Honors reverse the district court and rescind the license revocation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Matter submitted. We'll have a decision out in a statutory time period.